It's 8:33 in the morning. Well, whether it's leaving the car at home or not owning a vehicle or not being able to drive, getting around without a car can be a big challenge for many folks in Boulder and along the Front Range of Colorado. So how are we doing at getting people out of their cars and into alternatives? We're going to look at those questions this morning on A Public Affair. Our guests are from three local agencies that provide alternatives to personal automobiles. Frank Bruno, CEO of Via Mobility Services, Kevin Krause, General Manager of Boulder B-Cycle, and Peter Krahenbuhl, Executive Director of Colorado Car Share. And I hope I got your name right there, Peter. Welcome to you all.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Really good to have you here. A little later, folks, we'll also open up the phones for any listener questions or comments and email. But to start with, let's give you each a couple of minutes to describe your agency, what you do, how you do it, and also you could talk about maybe the biggest challenge you face. Frank Bruno, let's start with you from Via.
Thank you. Thanks, Sam. Good to be here. Via has been around for about 43 years. We're a nonprofit corporation headquartered in Boulder, but we serve an 8-county region with our signature paratransit service. And we do a variety of other transit. We've operated the HOP here in Boulder, municipal transit, since 1994. We worked with the city to create that. And we've been a contractor with RTD since 1996 with AccessoRide and FlexRide. But in the last couple of years, we've started our own shuttle services and have bid and won several contracts, Chautauqua's Park to Park, El Dorado Canyon State Park Shuttle, and recently the Lion Shuttle and Ride Free Lafayette. So really a variety of things. We're always trying to innovate and have a significant sustainability component, lots of solar, three new electric HOP vehicles, soon to get 10 more, and our own electric vehicles on the paratransit service as well, those body-on-chassis boxy vehicles. So again, we're just always trying to think of new ways to become more sustainable, to meet the needs of the public. And we were chatting a little earlier, frustrating for us on the paratransit side that we're so dependent on, whether it's some government revenue, government funding, or donations, that as a nonprofit corporation, we're limited in terms of the number of trips we can provide for people. And boy, the demographics are very clear. We're seeing more and more people signing up for paratransit service and then occasionally being frustrated with us that we don't have enough funding to provide a trip for everyone who needs it. So that's one of our challenges now that we're working on.
And did you say that your small buses are electric, those short buses?
Soon to be.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Our goal is by 2035, all of those vehicles will become electric or hydrogen, leaving room for hydrogen. And the HOP 2030 is the goal.
Frank Bruno from Via Mobility Services. Peter Krahenbuhl, ED of Colorado Car Share. What is that?
Yes, good question. Thanks for having me. Colorado Car Share actually goes back about 24, almost 25 years now. We actually started back in Boulder, Colorado, as the Little Red Car Co-op back in the day with a shared car between some neighbors and a clipboard and folks who were interested in both saving money and the environment. And since then, we've also become incorporated as a nonprofit. We're one of the nation's longest running and oldest nonprofit car share orgs and still actually going. And our mission is actually to help our community live relatively car free or as car free as possible, and to help them realize how to improve their health, wealth, and our shared environment in doing so. So we've grown quite a bit since then. We have a fleet of about 60 vehicles across Boulder and Denver, with offices in Boulder and Denver. And we're kind of a dual organization in the sense that we have our mission work around education, advocacy, and outreach of non-single occupancy vehicle ownership and use, and how to complement mobility modes like car sharing with other alternative transit efforts like what Via is doing and public transit and micromobility with bike share and scooters and walking and biking and whatnot. And then on the operational side, we operate our fleet of car share vehicles, which is a membership-based effort. We set the direction organizationally several years ago to at least attempt to be one of the nation's first fully electric nonprofit car share orgs. And we're about 30% there right now and hoping to move pretty quickly here within the next year or two.
Thank you. Kevin Carls, tell us about B-Cycle. We see the bikes around town at the racks.
Yeah, good morning, and thanks for having me. Yeah, Boulder B-Cycle has been in operation here in Boulder continuously since 2011, when we launched then. And at that time, we were one of the earlier, this generation of bike share system in the country. And at this point, we're one of the longest running bike share systems in the country. And so the system has certainly grown a lot in that time. For about its first 10 years, it was owned and run as a local nonprofit. And then within the last couple of years, we've actually merged the system to become part of Trek. And we fully electrified the fleet. So we have 300 electric bikes out on the street around Boulder. And we run a 24-hour a day, 365-day-a-year transportation system. And so I think our biggest challenge is trying to make sure that there's a charged e-bike at every station for people, ideally every hour of every day, but then also figuring out new ways that we can expand hopefully more of Boulder to serve more of Boulder, because we kind of serve a great core of Boulder. We say about 5 square miles, but we'd like it to be more than that.
I didn't realize that the whole fleet was electric. Are they charged off the rack, and is that a solar charging mechanism?
Oh, that is a great question, and one people often are curious about. No, at this point, we are actually doing all of the battery charging in our shop, and then swapping those batteries out in the field. And this year, we are very much hoping to pilot doing that more by e-bike, so using a large electric cargo bike to swap the batteries of our electric bikes.
We're talking about some alternative transportation modes in Boulder this morning on KGNU. And though as a non-commercial radio station, we usually don't talk about prices, I think in the context of this discussion and the factual nature of transportation and the fact that you exist on fees, I think it's important to talk about how much it costs to use these services and how you balance, you know, the affordability for the user with, you know, your bottom line. So what does it cost to use a B-Cycle e-bike, Kevin?
Yeah, we have a whole bunch of different pass types, but if someone wanted to just download our app and purchase a single ride, you could do so for $5 right now. If you want to become a monthly or an annual member, those rates are currently set at $30 a month for a monthly membership or $150 for an annual membership. And then really, as many times as you ride, you're only going to drive down the cost per trip to make it a better value.
$5 for a single ride, $150 for an annual pass.
That's correct.
And Peter, what about car share? You spoke of a membership fee.
Yes, there's actually no membership fee, but that's a great question because of the things, there is an application fee and then they can choose different rate plans. But gotcha. To your point, it's a great question because it really helps us to address our social equity focus, which is really allowing folks who can't or don't want to spend all their money on a single vehicle for every single family member to be able to share that vehicle with others in their neighborhoods. And so in doing so, they can save significant money over car ownership and all the costs associated with it. On the actual application side for becoming a car share member, it's a straight $25 application fee, which allows us to run the background, you know, driver's license check and all that, much of which is waived when we're working in our lower income communities. And then members can choose from a few different plans, basically depending on how much they drive. So if you drive very little, there's a free plan, which is basically a $7.95 an hour with mileage fees. So you can rent from 15 minutes to several days. And if you're just going to the grocery store and back, pay maybe $10 or so. It just depends. If you're a very frequent user, they might sign up for a plan that we have with a low monthly subscription of $8 a month, but they get a much lower hourly rate and mileage fee. So we have basically three different tiers for if you're a very infrequent user, somewhat decent user, and then a relatively high user.
What's is that cost a barrier for folks?
No, the barrier, and to your earlier question, one of our greatest challenges is simply letting folks know how cheap it is over individual car ownership. Like they just don't, it's getting the word out to folks about that. And then once they get in and realize, wow, I just saved $500 this month over the cost of owning a car and maybe spent, you know, $200 in car share usage fees, they realize pretty quickly that it's a pretty affordable deal.
I suppose one of the trade-offs is you can't always get the car when you want it. Is that right? Or
I would say that's relatively infrequent. We do member surveys at the end of each year, and that comes up as a, yeah, every once in a while I couldn't get it. But one of the things that we try to do is have what we call buddy cars near each other and other types of vehicles, as well as put our vehicles near public transit stops along things like the hop route and the skip route in town here, so that folks can get to that car or other cars relatively quickly. One of the things that we've noticed is that most of our members book their vehicle on the day of. So if you have any kind of advanced needs, like regular medical appointments, you can book those out in advance.
Okay. And Frank Bruno, how much does it cost a user to, say, the paratransit from VIA? What does that run?
So prior to the pandemic, it was $5 one way and $10 if you were going between cities. With the pandemic, we actually eliminated the fare. And we're still in that world where there's no fare to get a ride on via paratransit. But the reality is, if they pick me up today to take me from my home to the doctor, it really costs about $70 for that trip. When you think of the cost of the vehicle, the fuel, the insurance, and the salary of the driver.
Yeah.
So all these things kind of add up. And you know, where's the ability to bring that cost down is how we route. So we're working on implementing a new software that will be basically a smart software and will route accordingly and hopefully bring that cost down a little bit. But we're also wondering whether we should reinstitute a fare, because there's that old age old, if something is free, do you value it? And so that's something we're struggling a bit with that. The fare didn't bring in a lot of money, and was never a bar to someone getting a ride. If they could pay a dollar, they got a ride. But you know, in lieu of other funding sources, it may be necessary to go back to that world a little bit and see what we might do. But it's frustrating, because we'd rather provide rides for everyone and be free, but that requires a lot of funding.
Yeah, and a couple of anecdotes for you. So we could talk about VIA for a minute here. Heard about a guy in his 90s having trouble getting to a weekly lunch with his friends, an important part of his socialization, but not the doctor, but something that he values, and asked, well, you know, VIA can give you a ride. He said, it's too hard to coordinate. You know, I can't get it at the time I want it, and so it's not going to work for me.
Yeah, and that does happen. That's part of the frustration that, again, if we have more vehicles, more drivers, we can reduce that frustration.
Yeah, and then I'm at a stoplight the other day behind one of your buses.
Yeah.
And so I saw the sign, apply now, yeah. Benefits, bonuses, apply by text, and it gave a phone number. So making it super easy to apply, but you still don't have enough folks. There's a shortage in general, I think, of people with that level of driver's license. I know the school district struggles to find bus drivers. Is there any light at the end of the tunnel for that?
There is. We're seeing, you know, in our HR department, we're seeing more people coming back into the labor force. And our classes, I greeted a class yesterday of new employees, mainly drivers. And we had three in that class, but we've had 8, 9, which is, you know, significant. We're seeing that those numbers starting to come back up. And we're seeing the quality of the individual, that they're able to pass the background check and the drug test and things like that, because that's important. You've got to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. What do you pay hourly for a driver?
Well, we're up about $25 an hour now.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're talking with Frank Bruno from VIA Mobility Services, Peter Krahenbuhl from Colorado Car Share, and Kevin Kraus from Boulder B-Cycle, looking at some of these alternatives to single occupancy cars here in the Boulder area and along the Front Range. If you have a question or a comment, you can call us at 303-442-4242, 303-442-4242. If email is a preferred, email DJ, letter D, letter J, DJ at KGNU.org, and we'll try to work your question or comment into the program. Kevin Kraus, coming back to B-Cycle, again, anecdotally, some of those racks seem very sparsely stocked. Is that just a function of, you know, when the bikes get changed out, or that maybe that a lot of them are in use? Or, I mean, are your racks generally fully stocked? Do you have enough bikes to do that?
Yeah, we do. We do now. There have been times in the last year we've hit new peaks of ridership that we had never seen before, and it had made keeping enough bikes repaired and out in the street a real challenge for us. You know, for some context, we've done a little over 1.5 million lifetime trips since the system launched in 2011, with about a third of those, like nearly 500,000 trips last year alone. And so, you know, those new heights of ridership have been thrilling and also have made it hard for us to keep bikes on the street sometimes. Since then, we've added staff and shifts. We've added more bikes. And so at this point, we do run the system about what we call like half full. You know, at our 52 station locations, we have a little over 600 individual docks, and we aim to have 300 or more bikes on the street at any given time.
And I'm assuming ridership declines when it's, you know, like this, snowy, cold.
It does, but it's really amazing. So we do have a large fluctuation. Our slowest days are about 10% of the trip volume we'll see on our busier days. We're now having days where we're having over 2,000 trips on nice weather days. But even yesterday, when it was very snowy, the temperature dropped well below freezing, we had hundreds of trips. And so it's very interesting that we, you know, basically are out there trying to run this system 24 hours a day, regardless of the weather, because for some people, this, we know that this is part of their transportation option.
How do you handle a user safety, and what's your track record there?
Yeah. So we go out and inspect the bikes. Every bike is inspected at least monthly. That's someone from our team putting hands on it. But we also respond reactively when people report any issues. If someone, you know, reports an issue through the app or has emailed us or called us or texted us, we'll go ahead and lock a bike down so that it's not available for other riders, and then go and recover it and investigate the issue reported to us. So that's the way we kind of proactively and reactively respond to that. And then here in Boulder, our safety record is very similar to what it has been for bike share nationally. And so, you know, in our first, during this most recent time period of which we were reporting to the city of Boulder on micromobility, a pilot program, I believe that we had four minor incidents over around 400,000 trips, ballpark figures, but very safe compared to a lot of modes. And for us, it's really a lot of those incidents were just riders having had some lack of familiarity with biking. And so they were not all of them were vehicular, I think is a good thing to say.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose anybody can check out a bike. They may be intoxicated.
That's true. The bikes are available at racks, and we, of course, ask people in our user agreement, we specify that the bikes are intended to be ridden sober. We suggest that people wear helmets, though it's not required. We don't have a way of enforcing it. I think we, of course, always are encouraging people to use the bikes as safely as they can and trying to provide resources for them to do that. Ultimately, we're not in control of the choice that someone makes when they check out a bike.
And it is a bring your own helmet situation.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Peter, at CarShare, how does the insurance work, and what is the what are the challenges there? Like if someone gets in an accident while using a CarShare vehicle?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I was very impressed with Kevin's bicycle safety record there, which we would aspire to. Insurance is completely included, so that's one of the biggest parts of the covered costs. Unlike, for example, rental car where you have to have your own insurance, or there are some upcharges or whatever, but we charge all insurance for all of our members, less $1,000 deductible, and that is covered in case of any incidents. If it is an at-fault accident, then there is the deductible brought into consideration. We do, as with B-Cycle, have to deal with those typically minor incidents on occasion where we will receive a report that there's some damage on a vehicle, or if somebody comes up to the car when they first reserve it and notices something, then after that we will go ahead and put a hold on that vehicle, go out and take a look at it, and if we need to bring it out of service to do any repairs or whatever, then that's something that is a normal part of what we call our rounds with our fleet managers that go around pretty much every day and do the normal cleaning and routine maintenance, but then on top of that, when something is reported.
Have you ever found yourself in litigation where
Nope. Knock on wood.
Yeah. We don't want that to happen. We're talking about alternative modes of transportation with CarShare, B-Cycle, and Via Mobility here on KGNU. Again, our phone number, if you want to join the conversation, is 303-442-4242. 303-442-4242, or you can email us at dj@kgnu.org. I want to pull back from your individual agencies and just get your perspective on how the city is doing generally. I was looking for some data on vehicle miles traveled in Boulder, and I couldn't find any super recent data, but there was a report from 2020, a pre-pandemic report, showing that we're basically stable at 2.5 million vehicle miles per day. And they the city has revised their target, looking to get to 20% less than that by 2030. But what I take away from that is that vehicle miles traveled are kind of holding steady, which on one hand is good that they're not going up necessarily, and they may have dropped some during the pandemic. But we're not getting to where we want to be very fast. Your perspective on what is the biggest challenge there, independent of your agencies? Kevin, start with you.
Sure, I'll go ahead and jump in. I think in bike advocacy, there's certainly more bikes the thing first, or is infrastructure first? Both would be amazing. I'll go ahead and say infrastructure. Meaning safe, protected, ideally separated from vehicle lanes, places for people to ride. This is something we take into consideration whenever we're relocating a station or considering expanding to a new area, is what are the likely routes that people are going to take to either connect with other stations or get to their destinations? And it matters a lot to us. You know, I think we're pretty excited about the city's core arterial network plan. They've really set some clear parameters for what streets are going to see some pretty significant improvements. And that, you know, inspires us to look at those corridors in a way we might not have before. But safe places for people to ride, because, you know, you commented about how the numbers of trips have been roughly consistent for single occupancy vehicles. Bike mode share is also hovering somewhere around 10% in the city, which is high for an American city. But it's at kind of a ceiling right now, I think, because the people who are inspired to ride and would do so on a cold day and on maybe less than ideal infrastructure are already riding. And yet the majority of people would probably like to ride, the interested but concerned cyclists, but don't necessarily feel safe doing so all the time.
Mm-hmm. Frank Bruno, what's your take on that?
Well, I think the challenge continues to be bringing people into the city. If we're talking about the city of Boulder, that's the big challenge. We know that. It's on 119, 7, 52, 36, obviously. I think once people are in Boulder, I think Boulder is doing an increasingly good job, and that's where the three of us are constantly talking together about the opportunity to, as Peter was saying, locate car share along the hop or the skip route and bike sharing. So we're really trying to pick up those opportunities. We're seeing weekly hop numbers, 15,000 riders on the hop, and, you know, 700,000 last year on the hop, and those numbers are going in the right direction. So I think, again, once we can get them into each distinct community, I think we can do a good job of giving them options like bike share, car share in it. And again, hopefully we can do better at the modes bringing people into the community, whether that's shuttles or car share or pooling. You know, that there's still lots of work to do there. I mean, you just have to be on the commute and see that.
Yeah, so you're saying we're doing pretty good on what is sometimes called the last mile?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Or I'm not sure if I'm using that term correctly.
No, I think more so when they're in town and they're either at their jobs or their homes, I think they're figuring out whether they're going to do car share or bike sharing. I still think the first and last mile is a challenge in terms of people getting out of the single occupant vehicle and saying, you know, I'm going to take transit today. So, but how am I going to get in that first mile, mile and a quarter to transit? I think is still rough. Mm-hmm. Now, so maybe that's scooters, maybe that's bikes, but we've got a ways to go there. It's not smooth.
Yeah, and Peter from CarShare, anything to add to that?
Not much. I think Frank kind of took the words out of my mouth. It's the commuter traffic. So if we can really focus on improving that, we need to get more of the, you know, light rail in from the other metro areas with everyone that's coming into work in Boulder who can no longer afford to live here. That's a big part of the issue and challenge. And as Frank mentioned, once they are here, there are all of us mobility providers that can help to provide those additional, you know, non-SOV modes of mobility. So that's one of the focus areas since I've come on board with Colorado CarShare, which has been working with the likes of the business community, Boulder Chamber of Commerce in Denver, the Denver Metro Chamber, and really trying to help businesses with their staff and employees to understand that, you know, there are options if they can get into town by biking or by public transit, that when they do get here but still might have meetings all over town, there are options for them. And that's something that we try to focus on. And then I think the other component is when it comes to master planning for transportation is to really get the focus around the people-centric component of it and less around infrastructure and cars. There's a lot that is shifting in that direction, but there's also a lot that, you know, we still think of things in a certain way. And I think if we can think more about moving people into certain directions rather than building roads, for example, or widening highways, then that will help us to go a long way.
That's Peter Kronbuhl. He's Executive Director of Colorado CarShare. Kevin Krause is with us, General Manager of Boulder B-Cycle, and Frank Bruno, CEO of Via Mobility Services. Talking transportation this morning on listener-supported KGNU FM 88.5 Boulder and KGNU 1390 Denver. Again, the email is dj@kgnu.org. If you have a question you'd like to pose via email, you can also come in by phone at 303-442-4242. And let's check in with Lynn, who's on the line from Boulder. Hi, Lynn. You have a question?
Hi.
You got a question, Lynn?
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
The thing that I'm seeing here is that with the commute problem of the jobs, housing, and balance not being balance is a lot more people commuting in than commuting out. How can you separate that from the internal problems of Boulder of getting people around, because the development in Boulder is extreme. Like, I watched a thing on Planning Board last week for 45 new units on Pearl Street that are supposed that have robotic furniture in their rooms and stuff so that they can not have cars. But we don't know what a parking space costs. It costs close to $3,000 without a parking space. So this is supposed to be supplying the middle income, so there's a big drive to do that. So these projects are being approved, but that brings more and more people to Boulder, which brings more and more car share, but more and more congestion. And so ultimately, whether you, it's great that you're not having a car sitting in a garage, but ultimately you're still moving people all around, and still the transportation costs of keeping up the asphalt are very expensive, and all the transportation costs of all those people going to the open space because they're in a small space and they, you know, need to get out. And we have a deficit of $300 million in the open space.
Well, thanks, Lynn, for those comments. We'll try to unpack them with our guests here. I think, you know, the somewhat contradictory trends, well, we want to stem the flow in, as Frank Bruno talked earlier, by providing more housing in town. That creates density and other challenges. So it comes back to, I think, weighing the pros and cons of different ways of growing, right? Any comments from any of our panelists on some of what Lynn had to say?
Well, I'll jump in. I agree with a lot of what Lynn was suggesting. It's the age-old challenge that Boulder's had. I think, you know, Boulder, as you just said, is trying to provide more of those local housing options for people. And again, then once they're, you know, if they're here and they're working locally, you know, there's a lot of jobs locally now. And I think the city is desiring to try to link those together in ways that over the decades, perhaps we've not done a good job. So hopefully there'll be more people that are filling jobs in Boulder and taking advantage of the new development here. But as Peter was saying, boy, the prices, you know, if you're a relatively new teacher, nurse, firefighter, it's nearly impossible to live in Boulder. So you're still facing that in commute for trying to fill jobs here. So it's, there's going to be this challenge, but for the people that are living here and can work here, I think we've got to provide as many options as we can. I know the city's looking at, is there a possibility of being able to expand the route of the hop to better link up with the available local transit and these other options like car share and bike share. But boy, it's not a simple fix. And we've been at this for decades. We know that. So it's frustrating, I'm sure, for people who live here and want to live here and want to work here. It's just very difficult.
Anything to add, Kevin or Peter?
Sure. I'll jump in and just say that, you know, our organizations talk a lot. We coordinate regularly because we kind of view the options we provide as hopefully adding up to more than just the sum of the parts. You know, we I'm under no illusion that bike share would all of a sudden replace every person's every vehicle trip. But I hope that in concert with transit and with car share, that bike share is yet one more option that could let somebody live a car light or car free lifestyle. And so I think in that sense, development that is denser can actually be really supportive for us, at least of bike share, because there's more people in an area to use it. Areas that are mixed use tend to see more use, you call it around the clock or on all days of the week. And that's great for us because we are on a mission to do this in a self-sustaining way. So knowing that we might have more resident, call it work trips during a weekday, residential trips on a night, and recreational trips on a weekend, we kind of need all of those to make the system work in, you know, a relatively small and relatively sparse town. Boulder's lucky to have the options that we have given this town size.
Yeah, I would pretty much have to concur with what Kevin mentioned. Going back to one of our previous points, we know that commuter traffic into the city is increasingly a challenge, and yet internally with folks that are already here, it's kind of plateaued. So that's, you know, a sign that if we can, as Kevin mentioned, have more dense building here just from a transportation perspective, so not touching on anything else, then we have those other mobility options and can help to reduce traffic. I mean, all three of us, I'm sure, can point to the statistics of reduced VMTs and single occupancy vehicle modes based on our modes of travel. We know that specifically for car sharing with our model, which is a round trip station based model, the car lives in its location, that each one of those vehicles that we bring in replaces an estimated 9 to 13 single occupancy owned vehicles, mm-hmm. which is huge. So that if you're then working with a developer who can reduce their parking by adding a car share space, then that's a significant positive improvement.
You know, Peter, just one specific car share thing, we saw a press release from the city of Boulder that there are some new car share cars available in a Pearl Street lot. Are those available to car share members, or are those just for city workers to use? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, those are for anyone who wants to become a member, basically.
So more cars available there. We're at 303-442-4242 if you'd like to join the conversation by phone or email dj@kgnu.org. And here's one from the email. Listener writes, as people age, they often develop high blood pressure and take prescribed medication. And that can affect balance and a sense of stability. Often handicapped people of all ages have difficulty riding a traditional bike and maintaining balance. I sold my e-bike due to the above balance problems, concerned I might crash and injure myself or others. Searched in vain for a well-designed and dependable electric tricycle. They are on the market, but obtaining a trial ride is very difficult, and there are none available to rent as an e-bike is. So I think this is for Kevin Krause from Boulder B-Cycle. What about electric trikes?
Yeah, what I'll try to jump in on that one.
I want to see those at the stands around town.
So this is interesting. A number of bike share systems around the country have tried adaptive cycles. And in most cases, what the difficulty was trying to have enough of those vehicles that they were spread out throughout the system and available for the users who wanted or needed them most at the right times. When you put the vehicle out, necessarily it's available to everyone. And so, you know, I think we've certainly seen a challenge of trying to have more than one style of vehicle out in our system at a given time. So I think as of today, we do not have anything other than our two-wheeled electric B-cycle bikes out there. And we don't have any immediate plans to launch trikes in the system. However, we've also looked at trying to do a bike library model or working with other organizations around town and exploring how that could be done, where we'd ideally have a single location or potentially vehicles would be dropped off. How people would use them for a period of time varies from city to city. But that's the sort of option that, again, in a town of this size could best enable us to have more options so that, you know, the listener that you were referring to could at least try a trike or a hand cycle or any of a number of side-by-side of more adaptive bikes, because then they are available for private use, but they are rare enough now that it is hard to get on one to try it out.
Yeah. Let's take a call now. Evan, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Sam. Things. Both of the most popular electric bike companies in the U.S., that would be Electric Bikes and Rad Power Bikes, have both recently introduced inexpensive electric trucks for $1,500 and $2,500 respectively, which is half what they cost previously. The other thing is, Frank mentioned that it costs about $70 to pick someone up with dial a ride and take them to the hospital. So I did a Google Maps search for my route from my place to the hospital, and on my e-bike, it would cost me about 3.5 cents of electricity and another 5 cents in brake pads. And so my point is that anything we can do to get people bicycling early in life so that, like me at age 70, I could ride, not to the hospital, that's a bad example, but that kind of distance for 1,000 times less than it costs to carry that person. If they haven't taken care of their body and they haven't been biking their whole life. So whatever we can do to make bike routes safer, and hopefully the city will reinstitute their e-bike subsidy, anything to get people out there on their own will save society tremendously in the future.
Thanks a lot, Evan. Frank Bruno or Kevin Kraus, Peter from CarShare, any comment?
I'll just hop in on that really quickly because I think it's a great point and well taken. But as with the previous caller, it's not feasible for everyone. And also, as Kevin mentioned, that's exactly why the three of us sit down every couple of weeks and brainstorm about how we can better collaborate. So for example, what came out of some of those collaborations are we worked at Colorado CarShare with Via Mobility on getting a Next 50 Foundation grant so that we could provide a CarShare in an older adult fixed income Boulder Housing Authority community that would complement for those who can drive a car share vehicle there, but for those who can't, could also, you know, would continue to work with VIA and be able to have accessible, affordable transportation.
And I'll just say I'm really enthusiastic about how 2023 could be a humongous year for electric bikes in the U.S. with subsidies, you know, looking at from the municipal level up to the national level, and companies, as Evan pointed out, launching less expensive versions of electric trikes. It could be a really exciting time. I think that the kind of nexus of all of these things coming together of someone who's interested in getting back on a bike, they have access to, you know, bike share, car share, transit. They may have not also now have a much lower barrier to entries for a personally or privately owned trike if that's what they'd like or need.
Mm-hmm. And Frank, go ahead.
I was just saying, as Kevin was speaking earlier about the trikes, I was thinking there might be another collaboration between VIA and bike share with VIA bike share trikes. You know, specifically for that population, as the gentleman was saying, that, you know, really have that need. And maybe this is another form of transit that we're able to provide together. So something we can explore together again.
Yeah. And well, Peter, car is in your name. So your cars. But how many of yours are electric?
Right now, we have about 15 on the road of 50 plus that are on the road. We're currently working on a program with Xcel Energy to bring electrified car share in low-income and high emissions communities and other parts of the Front Range in the state. And so we have another, probably 15 or so on standby that will be rolled out over the course of this year. So we'll be up to about 30 to 35 EVs by the end of this year.
And hey, I think we have another piece of this puzzle on the line with us now, David from Lime Scooters. David, can you tell us your full name and what you do with Lime Scooter?
Sure. My name, first of all, hi, Kevin.
Hi there, Dave.
My name is David Sedbrook, and I am the Director of Government Affairs for the U.S. South with Lime. We're the micromobility company that you see all over Boulder. I am stationed and live in Colorado and a proud graduate of CU, so I'm very connected to Boulder, but wanted to call in and definitely add, a little bit of information about Lime as well, because we're obviously a part of this puzzle, and some of the talk on this particular call, especially around vehicles being accessible to people that maybe don't feel comfortable on bikes and scooters especially. We definitely see the demographics of scooter users in the United States trends to be, ages lower than 50 or 55. And one thing that I wanted to add to the conversation is that Lime, we're very committed to getting people out of cars. Obviously, we're looking to create a carbon-free society as quickly as possible. And part of that is our development of new vehicles. And we're actually piloting a vehicle in Nashville very quickly here. It's a new seated scooter that we're really excited about. And we're hoping that it's something that really changes the way individuals look at vehicles. It's one of our constant focuses, and it's something that we're hopeful that we can push forward into markets like Boulder and across Colorado in the near future.
So, David, as someone who's over 55, my concerns with the scooters, just as a person who's out there, is I get nervous when I'm walking and someone is zipping in front or behind me on a scooter that somehow we're going to collide. And then when I'm driving, I get nervous that it's a human being on what appears to be this tiny little thing. It makes me so nervous that I might, collide with them and injure them potentially even worse than if I collided with a cyclist. So I'm just sharing my own angst about these scooters. You perhaps have heard this before?
Yeah, absolutely. We hear it a lot. And I think, it's a new mode. Well, it's not a new mode of transportation, but the wide use of especially scooters is new to municipalities. And we just did an extensive study that we're going to release to municipalities very quickly about the safety of scooters. And honestly, scooters, by and large, with the number of rides that are occurring across the United States are fairly safe compared to a lot of the other modes of transportation that you're going to see in cities. That doesn't mean that it's perfect. I will tell you, we partner with B-Cycle. They're one of our great partners. And, in every community, one of the issues we have in the United States, honestly, is when we look at our business in Europe, the European cities were not built for the motor vehicle, the cores of the city. And so it's been an easier transition for micromobility and cycling. But in the United States, most of our cities were built for the vehicle, or at least amended for the vehicle. And so we are, one of the core issues is building better infrastructure for both bikes and micromobility vehicles. So it's one thing that we're pushing very hard, and we're finding a lot of municipalities are, as focused on this as us, but really we have to catch up, because that's what's going to make these roads safer for both vehicles and cyclists and micromobility users.
Well, thanks, David, for filling us in a bit on Lime. We're stacking up with the questions in the email and the phone, so let's try to get to as many as we can in the remaining 10 minutes or so. Here's a question, I think, for Kevin. What are the worst intersections for bicyclists in Boulder? Trouble spots. Can you name a couple quickly?
Yes. Well, one is 30th and Colorado. And I guess what's most exciting about that is we're on the cusp of having some amazing new underpasses open that's going to make that intersection much safer. 28th and Colorado, just a little bit west, has also been kind of dangerous and is having some improvements done as well. And I think that's kind of nice about the, I referenced the city's core arterial network plan earlier. A lot of that addresses some of those large intersections that have traditionally been kind of dangerous. I'll say we're incredibly grateful that the data set of Boulder B-cycle incidents is small enough that there's not a trend of specific intersections in the bike share world, but the city has great data available on this.
This listener also asks when KGNU will initiate the first in the nation bicycle traffic reports. So put that out to our news director for the bike traffic report as a feature of the morning magazine. Let's go to the phones now. I think we have Jim. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'm partly concerned about bike safety. Like, I think you should plow the side streets. You should not have flashing yellow lights, left turns. There was a city prosecutor talking about accidents being caused by speeding and left turns. These flashing yellow lights sort of provoke people to try and quickly make a left turn against oncoming traffic, and they ignore pedestrians and bicyclists. These stupid islands where the people can make a right turn without stopping, and pedestrians and bicyclists. There's one at University and Broadway. They're all over town, and they're designed to, like, have cars go first. Also, some of the bike circles, it's like they're too small for safety for bikes. They're designed to let cars not run stop signs. The traffic engineers seem to design to harm people and make cars go fast. So there should be more punishment, I think, for drunk drivers, distracted drivers, cell phone stuff, all that kind of stuff. And also these mid-block things, like where we have these flashing yellow lights, there was a homeless person killed in one. A friend who didn't have a car was run over in another. The flashing yellow lights start right away, and a pedestrian or bicyclist can go walk out in the middle or immediately or after somebody else has already started it at the tail end. They should have stops, like have a yellow, a red, and a stop, or else they should make more street intersections or something. It seems real dangerous even now in traffic, like when I drive a car. If there are big trucks on all sides, I can't see the flashing yellow, so I don't know that there's some pedestrian about to be there because the various trucks can block you from seeing it. But also, like, cars are running over even the white bicycles put up where bicycles are killed. Like, two of those places in Denver have had the bikes run over and over. So I don't think you should let cars make nonstop right turns, and I don't think you should have these flashing yellow left turn things.
Well, thanks, Jim, for those comments. And yeah, I understand what he's saying about the yellow flashing pedestrian. Sometimes it's a little challenging if someone steps right out right after they push the button.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, thank you for that, Jim. Let's go back to the email. Dave writes in, one of the pervasive issues for alternative transportation in Boulder is the absence of an off-street or less trafficked north-south route that keeps people off of 28th and 30th Streets in Folsom, which are very car-laden. Do any of the guests know about plans in the works to create a more direct, dedicated, and safe route from south to north? Not exactly in your bailiwick, but maybe you...
I can jump in just because of my level of familiarity with some city plans. Let me say first, I'm definitely not speaking on behalf of the city, but just, you know, as I had mentioned earlier, we care about these things because we watch these plans unfold for planning where we would expand the Boulder B-cycle system. And I'll reference one more time, city's core arterial network, the CAN plan. Please, you know, go ahead and look it up. It really lays out some of these main corridors, including north-south. And then, you know, there's already being work done on the existing corridors and intersections along them to hopefully improve them. But certainly, yeah, north-south connections and protected infrastructure along them would be very desirable.
All right, let's go back to the phones. David, another David, a different David, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you so much, and thanks to all you guys for working on this key issue, David Adams and Goose Creek Community Land Trust. I want to piggyback on the last caller about making more off main arterial bikeways. I think the key to the inevitable victory of more human-powered transportation is it's just so much more fun. It's so much more beautiful to connect with people along the way. But the whole idea of putting bikeways along existing major streets is just so bad for our health and so bad to mix our populations. So I'm wondering what all of you think about how we can more effectively promote, you know, a separation of cyclists and motorists. Thanks so much.
Thanks, David. Paul, or sorry, Peter, start.
That's okay.
From CarShare.
Yeah, thanks, David. I couldn't agree more. I lived in Boulder for 10 years and without a car and biked every day. And one day was in one of those winter, you know, snow plow into the bike lane accidents and injured myself relatively decently. So I completely get it and empathize with that comment. I think to all three of the last callers here, a part of that conversation and a shout out would probably go to having community cycles as a part of this conversation, because they are the ones that work a lot more on some of those safety issues, some of those policy, and some of those bike path and corridor issues.
Well said. Yeah, we're really grateful to Community Cycles for the advocacy work they do. And I think for our part, what we can continue to do is just highlight to the city how important it is. As evidenced by the callers today, people want protected infrastructure. I think we can fairly clearly carry that message over to the city as one of our partners.
And Frank Bruno.
I just wanted to add, you know, as we look at that infrastructure and sometimes we forget progress that we've made in the past. Think about Broadway and Euclid. That intersection that, you know, when I was at the city was one of the, I would say that would be on my list as one of the most dangerous back in the day. And now, you know, you think about bikes and scooters and skateboards that, and, you know, that can utilize that intersection very safely now. So, and you just mentioned Kevin 30th in Colorado. So I think they're very expensive, but when we have the opportunity to do more in that regard and separate the bicyclists from the vehicles, I think is worthy of attempting to do.
There has been progress. There's a lot more of those underpasses than there were back in the 90s or the aughts. Yeah. Just a comment from Cindy says, I heard that the EU is banning the sale of gas-powered and diesel-powered cars and trucks. That step here in Colorado would help the electric vehicle industry. So,
I believe we already have a statewide mandate for 80% plus of all vehicles sold new to be electric by 2030 or maybe 35. So it's coming along those lines.
And if I can jump in on a comment there, I think it's really exciting to maybe expand our thinking of what we think of when we say electric vehicle. It's easy to think of that being a personal vehicle that has, you know, had its internal combustion engine instead redesigned as an electric drivetrain. But electrifying transit and electrifying bikes or any sort of micro transit would hopefully accomplish a lot and maybe a lot more quickly, replacing more trips with electric modes.
Yeah, and Frank Bruno, in terms of your fleet, are electric buses cost competitive at this point, or what? How's that looking?
Well, they're it's difficult. They're not necessarily cost competitive when you look at the cost of a new pop bus, you know, Proterra electric. It's about $1 million, as compared to the diesels, that was about $400,000, and then you're also you have to deal with your charging infrastructure, but down the line, we're expecting to see reduced maintenance costs, which is really great, and hopefully that could be passed on to the end user. But obviously, there's much more that needs to go into the equation if you're looking at the quality of the environment and the sustainability of the service and that sort of thing. So that needs to come into the mix if you're looking at that $500,000-$600,000 price differential. You know, I think it starts to equalize when you think of the damage that we continue to do with combustion vehicles to the environment.
Well, we're running out of time. I apologize to any callers or emailers, but I want to give each guest a chance to just give a little concluding statement and also contact information. Let's start with you, Kevin Krause from Boulder Bicycle.
Sure. Well, thanks for having us on today, Sam. I'll say, for those who haven't either ever tried bike share here in Boulder, feel free, please give it a go. You know, there are bikes at 52 stations now around town. I'd say our call to action would be, please check out the B-Cycle app. That's a way you can join and also check out a bike. And then I also would love to invite, especially local residents who have seen bike share on the streets here for coming up on 12 years. If you haven't come and tried the system since it's been fully electric, please, I invite you to come back and try your hometown bike share system.
Thank you very much, Kevin Krause from Boulder B-Cycle. Peter Kronbuehl, Executive Director of Colorado Car Share. How can people get a hold of you, and what would you like to say in wrapping up?
Yeah, thank you for having us. You can learn more and become a member of Colorado CarShare at simplycarshare.org. And we have all of our information there. I would just say that our approach and what we offer is a complement to other forms of getting around and what I like to say, getting there better. With other modes of travel that does not involve single occupancy vehicle ownership for every single person in your family. We're not always a family's only car. Sometimes we're a second or a third vehicle with cars that have ski racks and bike racks and can get you up into the mountains on the weekends and all of that fun stuff. So, check it out at carshare.org, and thanks for having us.
Thanks. And Frank Bruno, CEO of Via Mobility Services.
Well, you can check us out at viacolorado.org if you want to look at our website, and I really encourage people to do that. So it gives you you can access our annual report there and gives you a good feel for the variety of modalities that we offer. And again, as I mentioned, from the shuttles to the transit to the paratransit. And you can get me if you want me directly at fbruno@viacolorado.org.
fbruno@viacolorado.org. Well, thanks to all three of you. Thanks to our callers and emailers. Thanks to Shannon for helping with the phones. And it's 9:29 at listener-supported KGNU. A couple of quick announcements and then diverse music on the Morning Sound Alternative. Stay tuned.